Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Mallory's Weird World Adventures, the podcast. This is our first official episode that's coming out to mirror an episode of Weird World Adventures, the TV show. So if you haven't, I strongly encourage you to first go onto either Amazon Prime or Tubi and check out Weird World Adventures. And this kind of goes along with the first episode. And we're going to watch, or I'm going to watch, the first episode here and give you guys kind of some insider scoop and talk about it as we go. I previously did a whole rundown in another podcast episode about Weird World Adventures, what it is, and the making of it. But just in case, here's a quick little rundown. From the creative mind of Explorers Club member Mallory Mackey comes Weird World Adventures, a uniquely bizarre travel show releasing on Amazon Prime and Tubi this spring 2024. Weird World Adventures shows you just how bizarre this world of ours can be. Join Mallory as she drives across America, and later the globe, bringing the beauty, wonder, and weirdness of our world to your television screen. Virtually explore places you may either be too afraid to or too cool to visit for yourself. From ghosts to psychics to the out-of-body experience to skepticism and beyond, we're going to see it all in this unique travel show. Are you ready to explore this weird world? So that's kind of what this is, and we're going to go right into episode one. This is the first part of the pilot episode that I filmed. I had said in my other podcast for you guys that the pilot episode was split apart into episodes one and two. So this is the first part of that adventure. So I'm going to play it now. And I will say right off the bat that the opener for Weird World Adventures is, so I just love it so much. We also used it as our sizzle reel. It's a lot of adventure footage. It's all either footage from the show or footage from my adventures that I've had around the world doing some extreme stuff like rappelling and there's some diving and lots of cool things. And it was inspired by kind of like that, you know, there was a show back in the day called Destination Truth. And I wanted that kind of adventure, weird, bizarre feel to it. So that was kind of part of the inspiration. And then we go right into the Cave of Munits, and my opener was shot there. And it's a cave that used to be by my old house in California in the valley. And this was added on much, much later. I believe I actually filmed this in 2021 when we expanded the two episodes. We took them apart to make them, you know, to make the one pilot episode two episodes because we had enough footage. But then I wanted like a stationary spot where I could talk and kind of, you know, pull the episode through from place to place so it wasn't just all voiceovers. So we filmed this hike years later after filming the pilot in order to have a way to bring it all together. I will say that I was probably 15 to 20 pounds heavier than I am now. I did get sick a while back and had a lot of issues with my health. And part of it was I had to keep eating because if I went hungry, because I accidentally starved myself when I was in Finland, I would get panic attacks. So part of it was making sure that I ate more than I really wanted to. And then, of course, because of that, I put on some extra weight. So I'm definitely heavier in this opener, which isn't a bad thing. I just like myself where I am now. So shortly after I recovered from being sick, I lost the weight. But it's funny, you can actually see the difference in the way that I look at the hike and the way that I look in the rest of the episode. Like, it's almost like two different people. And my hair has pink in it because it was shortly after the pandemic that we filmed that extra hike. So you can kind of see a little bit of weird pink in my hair. So anyway, let's talk about this first segment at the New England Society for Psychic Research, which is, as I said, Ed and Lorraine Warren's Ed and Lorraine Warren's company, their paranormal research group. And Tony Spera there is actually their son-in-law. And then Jeek, Chris Galorin, the other guy that's there, is wonderful. He's kind of become one of my major supporters, and I very much appreciate him. He really believed in the show before anyone else did, so I have to give him a lot of love here because he's a wonderful person. And Dan Rivera, the other one, is also just such a nice guy. I met up with them on Memorial Day in 2019 to conduct this interview, and I was really just blown away. I mean, it's such an interesting perspective and a different way to come at looking at paranormal investigations. So a lot of people look at paranormal investigations in an unreligious standpoint, and they kind of come at it at a very religious standpoint, which would make sense because Ed and Lorraine Warren work with the Catholic Church. They were demonologists, and that is a very different approach to the paranormal than just, you know, ghost hunting. And they really believe in helping people and doing what's right. And at one point, he even says it's, you know, a lot more serious and realistic than what you're going to see on those paranormal TV programs, and kind of takes a little jab in a way that I understand because, you know, what they were explaining to me was that they really want to help people. And they're coming at this at a way to improve people's lives, which I respect. And getting to see Ed and Lorraine Warren's museum with all of their artifacts, which, by the way, it's called a museum, but I will say that it is not open to the public. It's like a little tiny room off of their house that where they house all of these paranormal objects, infamous occult items, things of that nature. If you ever watch the Conjuring movies, and I believe Annabelle Comes Home actually takes place in the Warrens' occult museum and their house. That's what that is. It's like they're in their house. There's like a kind of a passageway that leads down to this place. And it's wild. There is a coffin in there from a case that they did. And by the way, if you Google search the New England Society for Psychic Research or NESPR, N-E-S-P-R, they will bring up, or Google will bring up their website, which has a lot of their case files on it. And a lot of these objects have stories that are tied to them that you can find in these case files. And I, like, people aren't allowed to just go here, so please don't just show up there. Like, that's something that needs to be stated because it happens a lot. But I was lucky enough to be invited for this interview, which is how I got there. And there's a vampire coffin that's in there, which is pretty cool, from a case that they had. There's the shadow doll is one of the famous objects in there. And I will have to say, though, obviously the two most famous objects that can be found there are the Annabelle doll, the one that they made all the movies about, and the Conjuring Mirror, the other object they made all the movies about. And the Conjuring Mirror was said to be utilized by someone who would conjure demons and spirits out of the mirror. And I will say that I shamelessly took a selfie in it. So luckily nothing happened. And Annabelle was the probably most famous cursed doll of all times. She's in there, and, you know, there's been several movies made about the Annabelle doll, and the real Annabelle doll is actually a Raggedy Ann doll. I hate Raggedy Ann. I grew up my entire life being terrified of Raggedy Ann and Andy. I think I might have liked them for 5 minutes when I was very young, and then I had a dream that Raggedy Ann tried to kill me, and then that was it. I would have nightmares about her all the time, and we were not friends. So... She was banished from my house and was always a point of contention. I was always afraid of Raggedy Ann as a child. And so getting to come face to face with not only, you know, the mother of all Raggedy Ann dolls, but like the actual Annabelle doll was incredibly intimidating, absolutely frightening. And I'm glad to say that, you know, I didn't spend too much time with her, but it was a very cool experience to get to say that I met Annabelle and she's in my TV show. And Matt Pavlo, my videographer, he was funny. He kind of, after the interview, went into the occult museum to get some B-roll while everyone else was outside talking and didn't realize that the doll was just directly behind him, and then just turned around like, ah! So when I came in, he's like, just so you know, the doll is right there. So you don't do what I did, because I know you don't like it. And I was like, oh, good to know. So luckily that didn't happen to me. But it was a really surreal experience. I had gotten no sleep because my friend's wedding was the day before. And then I grabbed Pavlo and we drove all the way up to Connecticut for this interview. Got in at maybe like 3 or 4 in the morning, slept for a few hours, and then came to the interview. And it was intense. I mean, they were wonderful people. Again, like I said, they come from a way of helping people, which I think is just super admirable. And it's a very spiritual way to look at this. Like, they believe in white light protection and, you know, meditating with the white light, which, and by their own words, they call the light of God. And I think my favorite Tony Sparrow quote in this interview is, spirits are real because God is real and God created us in his image. And it's just such a, you know, matter of fact, religious way to look at ghost hunting. And I've never met any other people that have this mindset for it. And it's just incredibly interesting. As a cultural anthropologist, as someone who is studying that, and as someone who wants to study the occult and is starting to study witchcraft and different beliefs, they are one of the most unique organizations I've ever had. They come from such a place of kindness and a willingness to help. And their mindset and views are that unlike anyone I've met before. So it was a wonderful experience. And who doesn't want to get to see Annabelle and the Conjuring Mirror in person? And also, when I got to walk around the occult museum, I did also get to spend some time in Ed Warren's office, which is just really cool. I mean, that's just a slice of history in itself, to get to see his recording equipment and his tapes and, you know, the area that he sat to work on all of his research. So I know the Warrens, Ed and Lorraine Warren, are very controversial figures. I know that there's, you know, been a lot of people with very strong opinions about them, both good and bad, throughout the years. Either way, I was very, very, very blessed and appreciative to be able to be in their space and to get to experience all of this firsthand. And it really made me confident for the first time that I had a show, and that if I could get them in my show, which I did, that it would be a success one day and that it would come to fruition. And it really gave me the courage and experience to continue on with making Weird World Adventures. So I have nothing but respect and admiration for these wonderful people, this incredible team. I will say that Lorraine Warren was actually alive when we had scheduled our interview. And my interview is still going to be with Tony Sparrow and the team, but she probably would have come out and made an appearance. But unfortunately, she passed away the week before. She actually died, or the month before. She died Easter weekend, I believe, of 2019. So she passed away right before. So that was, you know, I mean, that's just unfortunate across the board for everything and everyone. But we were still lucky enough to be able to visit her home and meet with her team, which was just wonderful. And then, let's see, on to the next adventure. Oh, I'm talking about The Demonologist, by the way, which is the book about Ed and Lorraine Warren, which I personally loved. It's fascinating. It was a very interesting read for me. So definitely, if you haven't read it and you're interested in that, I highly recommend it. And then, let's see, we start talking about the Monroe Institute, founded by Robert Allen Monroe. So the Monroe Institute is fascinating. It's funny because I grew up in Richmond, Virginia. The Monroe Institute is a little more than an hour away, maybe an hour and a half from Richmond, Virginia. And I never knew it was there. When I was doing research for my show on places that I could drive to while I was in Virginia after coming back from Connecticut, that came up on the top of my radar just from a Google search. And I'm like, who knew? How did I not know that this was in my backyard all those years and I never knew about it? So I reached out to the Monroe Institute to set up an interview. Their marketing director, Jenny, was just unbelievably kind, and she was excited to meet with me. So we conducted an interview about Robert Allen Monroe and his research and the Monroe Institute. And basically, they utilize their Monroe sound science, which incorporates binaural beats, different types of audio waves, and effects and things that actually push you into altered states of awareness. So binaural beats, if you don't know, which they used to call it hemisync technology, but hemisync is actually is no longer under their license. So it's the same technique, it's the same idea, but it's been molded and morphed and moved into something else, which is the Monroe sound science. And when you listen to it, it gives you a different wavelength of sound in each ear. You have headphones on, and it gives you one in each ear. And then the binaural beat is when the third wavelength is created by your brain to neutralize the two to make sense of them. And that kind of equalization that your brain does to do that kind of helps push you into altered states of awareness. And now, something I love, I don't know, I've studied a lot of anthropology recently as I'm, you know, looking to get my master's here. And altered states of consciousness come up throughout civilizations, throughout time. It's actually a huge point of culture and a huge part of anthropology. So it's funny that, like, this is how today we've added technology to the idea of altered states of consciousness. And through this Monroe sound science, people are having experiences connecting with their higher selves, connecting to what else is out there, you know, having their own out-of-body experiences, all kind of pushed through audio science. Because Robert Allen Monroe was a radio broadcast engineer who accidentally had an out-of-body experience one day and then utilized, you know, the technology, the sound, the things that he had in order to try to recreate it in people. And his research is fascinating. It adds a layer of science to the idea of meditation, which a lot of people approach from a spiritual side. So I love that with the Monroe Institute, you get the scientific research and the hard facts, and then you also get the spirituality. You know, there's people of all cultures, of all backgrounds, of all interests for that reason. It just is able to hit so many people in the right way because of how broad it is. And specifically, you know, I went there knowing pretty much none of this because I just read that it was like a center for out-of-body experiences, was blown away, was like, well, I definitely have to come back to the Monroe Institute. So I wound up going back for the Gateway Voyage Program, which is their initial program. And it was, it's such a uniquely wild experience. It's something like I've never experienced before. And if nothing else, it's really just deep and profound meditation. And then I wound up doing a manifestation course that they had from home shortly after that because then COVID hit. And I wrote all about this for my blog because I love the idea of manifestation and, you know, where we put our focus and intention, you know, how that can create success, if nothing else than just, you know, having our focus consistently be on what we want. And from that, Jenny saw my post and was like, oh, I forgot that you're a writer. We're looking for a blog writer. Would you write for us? And I wound up working for the Monroe Institute after that as their main blog writer. So it's funny that because of my pilot for Weird World Adventures, I actually wound up as part of the team for the Monroe Institute, and it kind of altered my course definitely for the better, which is just super exciting. And I'm not going to go too much into this either, but, you know, the CIA actually did a lot of research with the Monroe Institute. They also do a lot of research, the Monroe Institute, with the University of Virginia over there. but just on different facets of remote viewing, of the Gateway Voyage program. And the CIA kind of did a deep dive into it, and it was declassified a few years back. And of course, everyone freaked out, and it was, you know, it was all over the news everywhere because these declassified tapes came out where the CIA investigated the Monroe Institute. And then there was a missing page that was trending all over for a while, which was never actually missing, that they, you know, released to the public, the Monroe Institute did during COVID. So there's just, there's a lot of really fun, weird, bizarre stuff there that is worth the deep dive if you like to go down the rabbit hole sometimes on the internet. But I can't say enough nice things about the Monroe Institute, because really, just as someone who comes at things from both a very spiritual perspective and also a very logical, skeptical perspective, it scratches both itches very well. And it kind of comes at everything from both sides in a way that I highly respect. And I've already talked about the Monroe Institute a lot in this podcast, so we don't need to say much else here. I'll move past there. So then, this was all filmed, by the way, back to back. Went all the way up to Connecticut to film with the New England Society for Psychic Research, hop in the car, go all the way back down to Virginia, crash, go to the Monroe Institute, and then we continued on to Dinosaur Kingdom 2. But I think before we did that, I stopped at Starbucks because I always have to get my Starbucks. I think every episode of the show has me at Starbucks at some point, because that's just my fuel when I have no sleep. And that is not sponsored. Starbucks, please sponsor me. I talk about you all the time because I think you're wonderful. This is just a genuine thought. Anyway, Dinosaur Kingdom 2 was wild. So Mark Klein, when I called him to ask if he would be on the pilot for Weird World, he I think I left a message with somebody and he calls me back and he's like, hey, sorry, I was out in a parade this weekend, dressed up like Willy Wonka, throwing candy at kids. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a good interview. He is absolutely, fully and completely a showman. He knew just what to say. He cracked jokes. He really just made this segment special because he knew what to say and went with it and was all energy, all presence, all the time. And I applaud him for that, because I feel like, I mean, this is the, not that anyone's looking at me here, but this is the worst segment for me probably ever, because I was so exhausted after the days and days of filming. And I just look like super worn out, and I was definitely not on my A game, but it doesn't matter because he was perfect. His ability to give this amazingly personable interview with character and flair just made this. And I remember like getting there, and like, I think we went to the Dinosaur Kingdom 2 park, and they're like, no, you need to go to his workshop first. It's like some magic castle, not magic castle, but some kind of castle studios. And I remember like we pull up in there, and it's this bizarre like wasteland of old, partially used, like, giant acrylic lawn figures, and we're just like, what is happening? You know, and then we had to knock on the door and come in, like, hi. And he was immediately just so excited to show us all of his unique figures. He has stuff that's, like, hyper-realistic. He has cartoony stuff. He makes a lot of pieces for mini-golf courses, which is kind of cool. So he had a lot of that going. Like, he showed me, like, how that's conceptualized. There was a Wizard of Oz mini golf thing he was working on. And he kind of showed us, like, what it looked like from concept to completion, which was very cool. Like, he did a very good job being incredibly informative, on top of being insanely interesting. I think he's one of the most interesting people I've ever met. And this is my favorite line, I think, of the entire pilot, at least, or maybe even the whole show. This is my kingdom of fiberglass. Where he's like standing up on his rock and pointing out at the, you know, the wasteland, he calls it, of utilized fiberglass figures. And then we got to Dinosaur Kingdom 2. And that was, I mean, it was unlike anything I have ever experienced before. And, you know, hold on, I guess before we talk about Dinosaur Kingdom 2, I will say that, you know, Mark Klein, he did have, like, he lives life eccentrically and loudly, and because of that, he seems to have been bullied a lot. He talked about how he had two fires throughout his time. Dinosaur Kingdom 1 burned down. There was a fire at his studio here. And, you know, he was very open and honest about how people left him letters saying, you know, like, this is what happens to the work of the devil. So, you know, he's had a really hard past. So his ability to bounce back and still try to share joy with people and just be a prime weirdo in the face of people scoffing at him for it, I just applaud it. He's an exceptionally wonderfully weird person, and he's so proud of it, and I love it. And now let's see. At Dinosaur Kingdom 2, I will say the details in the park are exceptional. I mean, he thought about everything. And I like that it is like, you know, it's an art sculpture. It's also very interactive. It's also a park. You can have a nice walk outside there. You know, there wasn't a lot of people there, so it was kind of like a nice little, like, you know, you got your own space. It was cool. And I just look so exhausted in all of this footage because I'm holding a clipboard, oh my gosh, with like the release forms because we didn't get them back in the car. This was like the very end of a long, grueling several days of filming and me trying so hard to be my weird, engaging, energetic self and not quite hitting the mark. And the slimes all over. Like, he made a comic book that about the slimes, and he wouldn't tell me anything else about it, so you have to buy the comic to read more about the slimes. And then we entered the actual, like, dinosaur zone, which had lots of Civil War soldiers and lots of weird dinosaurs. There was, we sat on a Triceratops, and I know at one point there is a statue of Abraham Lincoln riding the Gettysburg Address and a pterodactyl flying off with other parts of it. And if you haven't watched the episode yet, all these things I'm saying probably sound like complete chaos, and that's why it's so awesome. Like, I love weird art, and I don't think anything could be defined as weird art more than Mark Klein's Dinosaur Kingdom 2. And then there's a part where we're walking across a bridge and he's like, I bet you touch wet paint, don't you? And he like pretends to touch the bridge like it's wet. Of course, it's not wet paint. And then I foolishly touch it like it's wet paint. Like, I was definitely very, very tired in this segment. And it's not, I mean, like, you can't really tell until I just go on and on and on about now. And I'm sure now that you will tell. I think my favorite part about meeting Mark Klein, though, was when he sang to me. Because he created a song about the slimes, and it's in the tune of Glory, Glory, Hallelujah, but it's his own very strange slime song, and it's just wonderful. It is wonderfully weird. And then to top it all off, you go through the whole park and you see all these bizarre figures and dinosaurs and all of this nonsense coming together in the best way. And then he created at the very end a bronze statue of himself with a slime that mimics basically Walt Disney's statue with Mickey Mouse that can be found at Disney World. And if I'm not mistaken, I think there's one of Roy Disney at Disney World and Walt and Mickey at Disneyland. Either way, it's a nod to the Walt and Mickey statue at Disneyland here at his Dinosaur Kingdom 2 park. Now, this is in Natural Bridge, Virginia. So, of course, if you're in that area, I do hope you also visit the Natural Bridge because it's pretty cool. Something else we were going to have in this episode that we didn't quite get to, unfortunately, was having some bizarre segment about Stonewall Jackson's body. And because, you know, Mark Klein stuff is all about the Civil War. So I'm thinking, and dinosaurs, but the Civil War and dinosaurs. I was thinking, well, maybe we could have Stonewall Jackson's arm grave in here as a nice little tiny mini segment put in there. Because For those that don't know, Stonewall Jackson was actually shot by friendly fire. He was shot by his own men when he was returning late at night and they thought he was the enemy. And they had to immediately amputate his arm because that was, you know, that was what was shot. And the arm was taken off and then given its own separate Christian burial because the person that amputated was like, well, we have to bury the arm and we can't just throw it around with all the other like amputated parts. Like this needs its own Christian burial because it's Stonewall Jackson. So it got its own grave. So there is actually a grave up north a little bit from where I grew up in Virginia that is Stonewall Jackson's arm grave. It was given a Christian burial. I have to keep saying that because it's absurd. And then he died shortly after because, you know, amputations were very, very risky at that time. So he died from an infection from that. And then his body is also very much near to where the Dinosaur Kingdom 2 is. And I believe his horse might actually be on display there. There is some interestingly bizarre stuff related to Stonewall Jackson's body. And the arm grave is specifically just something like, well, we should definitely feature this. But unfortunately, that morning that we were going to go look at it, it was raining and we hadn't really slept. So we kind of took the time to sleep a little bit and avoid the rain. And, you know, with everything going on now, you know, with the statues and it's like, do we really need to talk more about Stonewall Jackson? Maybe not. So, but I just wanted to give that nice little sidebar here because it was pretty wild that his arm has its own burial site that was given a Christian burial. So that was it. That was the first episode. I really hope you enjoyed. It was years in the making. The nice footage that kind of is strewn in between was filmed much, much later at the beginning and the middle and the end. And the interviews with the Monroe Institute and the New England Society for Psychic Research and Dinosaur Kingdom and Mark Klein, those were all filmed within a 2-day span together on this crazy, wild road trip adventure that just set the pace for Weird World Adventures episodes. And I can't wait for you to see more of them. So I hope you watch the first episode of Weird World. If not, please go to Amazon Prime or Tubi and check it out. And next week, we're going to go over the second episode of Weird World Adventures, so make sure you watch that too, and then listen to the episode talking about the second episode of Weird World Adventures next week. Until then, guys, stay weird, and I'll see you next week.